This is Artist Stories, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County. I'm your host, Ava Romero. Today, I'm with Hannah Levine, host of The Homestretch and director of content here at KXCI.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Hannah, I want to talk about your personal trajectory, but first, can we start talking about KXCI in broad strokes? What is community radio? What is commercial radio? And why does the difference matter?
There's a very dramatic difference, especially since the mid-90s and radio consolidation. What happened with commercial radio, which is exactly what it sounds like, their funding comes through advertisements and is driven by commercial interests. When deregulation happened and a lot of radio stations started being bought up in chunks, there used to be a limit on how many radio stations one entity could own. And then when deregulation happened, lots of radio stations got bought up and therefore homogenized under these commercial interests. And community radio and nonprofit, non-commercial radio certainly existed before that, but I feel that the importance of independent non-commercial radio became even more paramount after that happened. So community radio means lots of different things. There's many different community radio stations around the country. For KXCI, what it means is it's radio that is designed to connect the communities of Tucson and Southern Arizona to each other and to the world. And those connections are made by our volunteer programming base and all the people that come together to make this radio station what it is within Tucson and beyond. We're on 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and reach at least 35,000 people.
And I think it's really interesting to mention that there is a human behind almost every minute of broadcasting.
Yes, absolutely. With the exception of Democracy Now!, which it still is a real human, but all of our content is produced here, whether it's pre-recorded or not. It's a live human doing it. It is their passionate ears curating it. It is their expertise in whatever field they are focused on or whatever genre or specialty they may be focused on. It is very much real people, real radio.
Can we talk a little bit about the partnerships that KXCI has with different community organizations?
We have such a huge range of partnerships and they manifest themselves in a bazillion different ways. So there's no way that I could hit on all of them. But if you're a regular listener to the station, you hear what we call community impact announcements. And those are our ways of amplifying the voices and the needs of other nonprofit organizations in the community, both in order to promote their message and what they're trying to do to make Tucson a more beautiful place to live, but also to connect our listeners with services different nonprofits may be offering, whether you're talking about a job placement program, a food bank, or anything of that ilk that could help a listener out. So we have those, and those are a kind of a bedrock of those partnerships. But we also have all sorts of other things, such as our partnership with the Tucson Hip Hop Festival. We work very closely with the University of Arizona, particularly the Africana Studies and Humanities departments, as well as the various science colleges that you hear discussed on Thesis Thursday. Aside from nonprofits, there's other cultural institutions involved with music. You know, we collaborate with MoCA when we can. We really believe in working across as many logical, creative disciplines that make sense for our listeners. And the opportunities for that in Tucson, of course, are endless.
And right now, we actually happen to be recording this from the Hotel Congress Studio, which was also a very intentional decision to open this studio in this spot.
Absolutely. Being in Hotel Congress, aside from the fact that it's just a lovely thing to be in this historic hotel, it was also about visibility within the community and really genuinely being boots on the ground right here where anyone can walk by and see us, get excited about the work that we're doing, maybe learn about ways that they can get involved with the station, but just literally being here on the street within this heart of downtown is a really vivid example of how we try and connect with our community and our listeners.
So if you're walking by on Congress, just peek in and you might see some radio in action.
Yes, absolutely.
Hannah, you have a great story that I believe is a really wonderful illustration of how KXCI connects national, local, and global communities. It's a story about interviewing Michael Franti and Spearhead on a particularly dark day.
Michael Franti has been a guest at KXCI numerous times throughout the years, even before I got here, and he's always a delight to have on the air. He's just a kind, lovely soul, and also always incredibly thoughtful during the interview portions of what we do. He's been on the air and talked about the importance of contributing to community radio, which I really appreciated. But the last time that he came was a very difficult day because that morning, the news broke that Anthony Bourdain had died. And so as a travel food writer, journalist figure, he has a pretty broad impact upon our listenership, our community. You know, as you mentioned, we're right here in Hotel Congress. I remember when I walked in that day, you could feel the energy coming from the service staff and the chefs in the kitchen at the Cup because it was such a dark, sad day. And having Michael on that day and having him address that head on and talk about the difficulties of losing valuable cultural figures that we lean on for inspiration and comfort, and just really reflected on the importance of valuing living in the moment and honoring their work and never forgetting to make a human connection. And if you watch the video on our YouTube channel, he will articulate that much better than I just did. But the thing was, is not only did he deliver a lovely performance, he talked about something that I knew our listeners were thinking about and deeply upset and saddened about. And so having the artists not only be sharing their art, but talking to the community about something that was affecting everyone on that particular day was incredibly moving and comforting.
I was raised in Paraguay, and he went to Paraguay and ate typical Paraguayan food, and he's the only celebrity I know of who made a show about doing that. So that was tough.
Yeah.
And actually, after his passing, there was a really good article by Angela Orlando in Tucson Foodie, I believe, about mental health struggles and the service industry. And she did the entire thing based on interviews with service industry professionals in Tucson. It was really great, really raw. Hannah, how does a person get involved with KXCI, and what kinds of roles do volunteers play?
Crucial ones. Volunteers are the lifeblood of what we do at KXCI. The overwhelming majority of our programmers, that human voice that you hear behind the microphone, those are volunteers, which is extraordinary. I mean, it's not easy to plan a radio show, especially if you're someone that deeply cares about it, which is true of all of our programmers. So volunteering their time to make sure that they have the skill set to run the technology, be up with FCC regulations, and then take all that time to put together a beautiful show is an incredibly generous act of volunteerism. So that's crucial to what we do. We also have volunteers that help out with everything from managing our donor database to helping with mailings to helping out during on-air fundraising efforts. Volunteers help us maintain our house, the Armory Park House. That's our other location where we broadcast from. We have people that come in, volunteer their time to paint and beautify and help with landscaping and that sort of thing. To be a nonprofit organization that's on the air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, takes a great deal of volunteerism. And so, as I said, not only the programmers, but people that just keep the whole ship running are incredibly, incredibly important. And the way folks get involved, the most direct way is simply to go to the website, to go to kxci.org, and you will see links to different opportunities that are coming up, whether they're volunteer opportunities, educational opportunities, you know, ways to donate. Aside, some people think it's just a dollar thing. Not at all. You can donate your time. You can donate your car. You can donate stock. So the website is the best point of entry for figuring out different ways of getting involved.
I believe 70 was the number.
A minimum of 70 volunteers involved with the station. It's actually, that's our approximately what we have in terms of programmers, and there's so much more beyond that as well.
If you had to describe the personality of KXCI, how would you describe its persona?
I love that question. It's not a simple one to answer without resorting to cliches like eclectic, but that's quite accurate. I would say, you know, KXCI, if you were envisioning it as its own sort of organic entity, very curious, intellectually curious, creatively curious, wanting to discover new things, but at the same time, an entity that has a deep love and affection for history and the worth of remembering historical artists and moments and events, caring very much about the past and what one can learn from the past, and also being really adventurous in spirit of wanting to discover new music, new people, new happenings in your community. So kind of a foot in both worlds. And again, I mean, there is no typical KXCI listener, which I think is beautiful. You know, people like all different kinds of music. Not everyone likes everything, but there's something here for everyone.
Hannah, when you came to KXCI, one of your priorities was to nurture the live in-studio guest sessions. Can you tell us about where we are with that?
Sure. I've always thought that in-studio appearances by visiting artists or other visiting community members were incredibly important to what we do. It is, you know, it is part of what makes community radio unique and independent radio unique. And there are lots of different goals with that. For me, having a video component involved was really, really important to me, not only because having a visual document of someone's performance is just a whole nother way to engage beyond just the audible. You know, if talking about that Michael Frontian studio, seeing his face and his expressions and all that just is a whole other dimension to what you can experience when you tune into the station. But it's also, frankly, a lovely document that the artists themselves then can share. And in some ways, it's a historical document. So when Roseanne Cash or Chelsea Wolfe comes by to visit us, that session is live that day. It's archived for a couple weeks in streaming archives, but then that goes away. The video never goes away. We will always have this visual document of a particular performance. And so on those lucky times where you get lightning in a bottle with an extraordinary performance, then we always have this document. And I always really try and make sure that the artist enjoys themselves, because I think that we have a distinct obligation to be good ambassadors when people are visiting Tucson. I want every musician and artist in the world to be excited about visiting us. So I always want to make sure that they have a great time and feel appreciated, and that the person that's interviewing them is reasonably well informed about who they are and what they're doing and what they're trying to achieve. But equally, if not more important, is the listener's experience of that. So really thinking about what a listener might want to learn about a particular artist, and making sure that the questions are open-ended enough that it can go interesting places. So it's really those are my two priorities, are making sure the listener has a wonderful time and the artist as well.
I think the way those sessions are shot is very beautiful.
That's Julius Schlossberg. Got to give credit there for that. He's an amazing videographer.
Very beautiful. And we can see those on KXCI's social media. We can see those.
Yeah, they populate throughout the different expected platforms. You can see them when you go to kxci.org. There's a video section there. We also have a YouTube channel. And if you follow us on social media, we always publish them there as well.
If you had to describe the Tucson music scene in broad strokes, how would you?
I've only been here for 5 years. I've been in the music industry for about 25 years. I came here from Seattle. So Tucson has a very long and fascinating music history, and I have only just begun to experience it. In broad strokes, it is... It reflects what you see in a lot of other small music community towns, where there's a lot of camaraderie. People, musicians go to each other's shows, support each other. You see a lot of cross-pollination. I actually was just sitting on the porch of a local musician last night talking about some informal songwriting salons that have just all of a sudden started popping up, where different local musicians are getting together in someone's kitchen or on their porch and sharing their work in progress and helping each other with whatever they're writing. So that kind of collaborative, supportive spirit is very much a part of Tucson, as it is in a lot of other towns. But I think we're really lucky to have that, because that's one of the key components of the the creative ecosystem that you need to make that keep going. The other thing that I find really interesting about the Tucson music community, and in some ways is frustrating, and it's a challenge and an opportunity for growth, in that a lot of young folks might come up in the music community here and be really passionate about creating and getting involved. But then after a while, they kind of get antsy and they want to go to LA or New York or one of the coasts. And we often have this great incubator for young artists, and then they go off and have other adventures, which I completely understand. But we end up with sort of a stratification of very young artists that are kind of temporary, and then super old guard artists who've been around for a long time and are, you know, very loyal in their love for the old Pueblo, and that's fantastic. But we're missing something somewhere in between. We need to start figuring out ways to retain, you know, the 30 to early 40 something artists and keep them in that whole range of artists. We need artists from every decade, from their 20s to their 80s, and I just would like to see that more fully represented.
Do you have any ideas about what we could do to keep more of that young talent in town?
That is a wonderful question. I think that that's something that if you really care about it, you have to continuously be examining it. It requires all sorts of different things. It requires one thing that at least so far we're retaining is affordable rehearsal spaces. So quite literally just a place where people can go to create art that they can afford to. And affordable living overall. Music venues also, you know, I would say, in my opinion, we could use another mid-sized venue right now with the closing of Flycatcher/Plush. We need another mid-sized venue because bands need different places to try out. You know, you don't go from, playing at La Cocina to playing at the Rialto necessarily. And so we could use, you know, much like that kind of middle ground I'm talking about, I think we could use more in the middle ground with that. But also just really continuing to be aware that it's incredibly important to have a platform like KXCI where artists' work is validated and heard. So Locals Only, which is the local music show on Monday, is focused exclusively on nothing but local music, new and old. And so having a platform like that around, making sure that that stays and is out is incredibly important. But I think, yeah, it's a real challenge and something that we should all be thinking about and concerned about and be trying to nurture more.
I totally hear you on the mid-sized venue thing, because that was one of the things that I loved when I moved to Tucson, was that I could go to Plush and see, in such an intimate venue, a band that I was really excited about, and even hang out with them after the show. It was just easy, you know, and I often tell people who are coming to Tucson to watch shows, you know, you could probably hang out with them afterwards if you just kind of stick around and watch for them, because it's the old Pueblo, you know?
Yeah, well, we need lots of different spaces for art to happen in order for everyone to feel included, involved, and inspired.
I don't know if everyone is aware that there is a really interesting connection between the Tucson music scene and Europe, specifically France.
There were so many happy discoveries I had when I moved to Tucson from Seattle 5 years ago. And one of them was this little cultural portal that exists between Nantes and Tucson. And it happened for a variety of different reasons, but it was very much kind of in a DIY organic spirit that it happened. There was a band in France called the Little Rabbits that really wanted to record with Jim Waters, a local producer, because they knew, you know, Jim is famous for a number of things, including working with Sonic Youth and John Spencer Blues Explosion. And so Little Rabbits kind of made this pilgrimage to come here and work with Jim. Kind of fell in love with Tucson and then started making connections with local bands here, like, you know, Golden Boots, like Giant Sand, all those other, and started bringing them to France. And so it just slowly kind of grew that way. Other French musicians started coming here. Marianne Desard was a big part of that. She came here and then, you know, brought Brian Lopez and Gabe Sullivan back to France. And now if you're a Tucson musician and you want to go over to France, there's a whole network set up to make that happen, which is really, really extraordinary. And it's kind of, you know, if you whether you're a fan or a participant in the Tucson music scene and you have the opportunity to go to France, specifically to Nantes, France, I can't recommend it enough because it's kind of great. You see KXCI stickers all over the place there, and they really love the Southwest and specifically Tucson and what has come up in our creative community here. So it's a really lovely thing.
It reminds me of the comment that you have made and that came up in our last conversation, which is Tucson is kind of a town that doesn't know how cool it is.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking that too. This is my 11th episode of Artist Stories. And again, I interview people who blow my mind, and I didn't know half of what I know about them after the interview. And I'm like, wow, you're a badass. You're a total badass, but you haven't flaunted it. It's too little fanfare. And I think that there's a lot of really great creativity happening in Tucson that people are just not making big bones about. They're just living.
They're just doing the work.
Doing the work.
Yeah.
So here's the part that I bet lots of people have been waiting for. Tell us about you.
Oh, geez. that's one thing that I'm actually not super good at.
Well, can we start with your feminist background?
So I grew up in Seattle and was a women's studies major when I went to the University of Washington, and was originally interested in working specifically around female sexuality and reproductive health care. And that's what I did. I was a clinical researcher for Planned Parenthood for quite some time. But this was also the early to mid 90s in Seattle. And so I was going out to shows probably at least five nights a week. I lived in a group house with musicians. I was immersed in it. It was not ever lost on me that I was living through a pretty extraordinary cultural time to be in Seattle in the mid 90s. And so I couldn't help it. I just fell in love with it. And much to my parents' original dismay, I left my really great job at Planned Parenthood to enter the music industry. And I've done almost everything under the sun other than hold a guitar, play drums. I've been a band manager, a publicist, a festival producer, promoter. I've worked production in clubs. And I eventually settled on music journalism as my area of interest. I was always driven by a passion to illuminate people that were doing interesting work in the margins. Seattle and Tucson and most cities have interesting stuff going on that no one really knows about. And so if you're in a position where you can kind of shine the light on that and say, hey, come look at this neat thing, that's always been my motivator in the industry, no matter what sort of subfield I was in. So music journalism, that was my arena. And I was a music columnist for various papers and magazines over the years. Did some national work beyond Seattle for Rolling Stone, Spin, Bust, a few other magazines. And then eventually the radio station KEXP in Seattle, which is another independent community-based radio station, the program director there just reached out to me and said, would you ever be interested in DJing? And at that point, my understanding with the motivation was that because I was a published writer and he read my, you know, he said, I know that you know your music history and that you care enough about local music to go out and see new bands and discover new bands. And I think you have a good voice for radio. And so he brought me in to start hosting the local Seattle music show. And I did that for many, many years, close to a decade. And then also because they didn't have a heavy metal show at the time, and that's something I've always been passionate about. I was the founding producer of Seek and Destroy, which was the metal show, and which still lives on at KEXP back in Seattle.
So how did we get so lucky to have you here the old Pueblo?
Well, I don't know. Seattle is, it will always have a special place in my heart, but Seattle is utterly unaffordable now. And myself and countless other people I know in the music industry have had to leave Seattle because of its unaffordableness. And also, I mean, that aside, frankly, I had never really been a huge fan of the weather there. and the desert has always been appealing. I spent a lot of time in my childhood in New Mexico. For summers, we used to go to Ghost Ranch in New Mexico. And I've always loved the Southwest. And I had an opportunity to come down here and visit. And I had never been to Tucson and instantly fell in love with the architecture and the people and the heat and everything about it. And had been kind of looking for a logical exit from Seattle and just just different pieces of my life fell into place and I came down here. And one of the clinching factors as I was sort of sifting through the possibilities about moving down here was the fact that there was KXCI, that there was a community radio station, because my experience with KAXP in Seattle showed me that that is such an incredible part of maintaining that ecosystem and having that platform. And I also just, you know, at that point I was really deeply entrenched and in love with radio, and I couldn't imagine going somewhere that didn't have an independent radio station. So when I got on the Googles and figured out KXCI was here, I started streaming it back in Seattle, and listening to KXCI every day and just sort of falling in love with Tucson more and more by extended proxy, and was absolutely delighted when KXCI kind of welcomed me into the fold when I came here.
So as someone who lived in Seattle in the 90s, someone who lives in Tucson today, you got to experience the best of Seattle, and then it kind of got over a hump in terms of quality of life and affordability. And then now you're here in Tucson, and we're kind of at that pinnacle.
Right.
So what is your advice?
Well, I think it's really important to, first of all, for me to be really respectful of the people that have lived here a long time and called it their home. For me, I've only been here for 5 years, so these massive changes that happened to downtown had already transpired before I even got here. So I absolutely understand there are people that have lived here a long time that are in mourning about things and legitimately anxious and angry about affordable housing and worrying about that. And so I guess what I would say in the most broad terms possible is where Seattle got into a lot of trouble was when they realized that gentrification was happening, and they kind of threw their hands in the air and just said, oh, it's inevitable. Capitalism is going to kill everything and we're going to be ruined. And well, what do you know? Self-fulfilling prophecy there. Get involved. Pay attention to who your elected officials are. Go to the affordable housing forums. Figure out ways that you can engage with people in your community that are really committed to affordable housing. Not everyone here is a predatory developer from California. I'm not saying that they're not amongst us, but there's also some amazing, amazing people that are, you know, caring about and preserving, buying buildings, and, you know, let those people know that you love them. I think of the downtown Clifton as a wonderful example of that. It's Monica, the woman that bought the downtown Clifton, preserved and restored it and made sure there was still a great independent hotel downtown. And she's bought some other buildings and is going to be doing that. So, you know, recognize the people that are doing the work, support them, support what they do. And don't just throw up your hands and think that there's nothing you can do. It's fine to be scared and angry. It's absolutely legitimate. But where Seattle got into trouble is they just gave up before they even had a chance. And we're at an interesting precipice here. We have options.
One last question. Could you tell us about your process for curating the music that you play on the home stretch?
I mean, there are a lot of facets of my job that I absolutely love. And that process is one that it's a good thing that I love because it never stops. I think about music constantly. I dream about music. I hear patterns and themes and different ideas in my head all the time, whether I want to or not. I'm constantly taking notes, whether it's on my phone or, you know, just like literally scratching something down. I will get inspired from everything from overhearing a conversation on the patio at Shea's to watching an old movie or a new music documentary. So I'm constantly collecting ideas for songs, for themes, for artists that I want to explore, identifying areas where I need to be educated more. And so I'm culling those things all the time and kind of putting them into different buckets in my brain. And then usually when I sit down to put together a show, like I did right before I came here today, I do a couple of basic things. I mean, I read all the trades every day, whether you want to or not. I pay attention to Pitchfork and Stereogum and NPR Music and all the places that are writing about new music and what's, you know, going on currently. And then I also check a couple of historical sites usually to see what's happened in music history on this day, whether it's the birth of someone or the release of an album. So that kind of, I find that very contextually grounding to kind of look a little bit at history while I'm also looking at the trades and seeing what's happening that day. So I do that, and then I kind of sort through my notes and kind of just assemble all those ingredients. I usually have ideas about a few things that I want to kind of link or daisy chain together. But for the most part, I actually am very much a live DJ that goes on feeling. So I'll start the show, and then I kind of just, I mean, it sounds kind of hokey, but I just see where the energy takes me. It's kind of like just showing up with a bunch of great ingredients that you know that you're like, oh, well, that looks good at the farmer's market. You grab all these ingredients, and then you just kind of cook live and just kind of make it happen. So that's kind of how it works for me.
I love that metaphor.
I love cooking too, like actual cooking. But cooking with music is an absolute joy. It's a challenge, but it's an absolute joy.
Hannah, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
This has been Artist Stories with Ava Romero, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. To listen to more podcasts, visit kxci.org. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County.